Good afternoon and welcome to Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. This program is all about music and the people who make it. The gentleman that I'm going to welcome to the program tonight, I first saw perform when I was just a junior in high school at a place called the Hammond Civic Center. You see, he was the bass player, the core founding member of the rhythm section, along with his brother, in Blue Oyster Cult. I'm talking about Mr. Joe Bouchard. Joe and Albert Bouchard were the core rhythm section of Blue Oyster Cult, and in many ways, one of the great rhythm sections of all time in rock and roll. We're going to talk to Joe about his new album, Strange Legends. We're going to hear some songs from it, and we're going to talk about another super group he's in with Albert called Blue Coop. All of this, and of course, a little BOC in the mix, coming up after this. Good evening, and thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. My name is Tom Lounges. My show is Midwest Beat. It's a program all about music and the people who make it. Well, tonight we've got a very special guest, a gentleman that I've been following, well, since the mid-1970s. Maybe you too. His name is Joe Bouchard. He's a founding member of Blue Oyster Cult, but he's done so much more. He's got a group called Blue Coop. He's also got a series of original solo albums, and we're going to feature his latest, Strange Legends, as we talk to Joe. But let's take you back to his history, his early days, to the mid-1970s, with a song that he wrote and sang for B.O.C. This is Joe Bouchard. refreshing your memory from 1973, the Tyranny and Mutation album, B.O.C., and Mr. Joe Bouchard, one of the songs he gave us with that legendary band, and Joe has not slowed down at all. He's got a brand new album out, one of many solo albums, and we're going to feature a song right now, opening track of Strange Legends. Joe Bouchard is joining us after this. It's the African Queen.
Across the river, deep in the jungle, the big picture. For the team, the world in full color and deep in extremes. Riding on down the river, where crocodiles pose a threat, swatting the bugs away and drowning in the sea of sweat. In a world you've never seen, shooting down the rapids.
Taking a ride on the African Queen on Midwest Beach here at Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. That's the opening track of the newest solo album from Joe Bouchard. We open the show up with Hot Rails to Hell. Just kind of refresh your memory and take you back to my youth. 1973, Tyranny Mutation, that album came out. Just look at the evolution of this great entertainer, this great rock and roller, from Tyranny Mutation to Strange Legends and many albums in between. We're going to talk with Joe about that evolution, about that history, and about what's coming up next, as well as his other current band, which I teased you about earlier. Joe, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Good to talk to you, my friend. It's been many, many years since you and I connected, and I'm sure you won't remember it, but you played some shows back in the day with BOC at the Hammond Civic Center in Hammond, Indiana.
Yeah.
That was the first time I met you. I was doing a show called Night Rock. I was right out of high school and interning.
Wow.
And
yeah.
You guys gave me a great interview that day.
In the good old days.
I remember that because Albert, your brother, would play Godzilla with the giant Godzilla head on.
Yes.
I never
the drum solo with the Godzilla head.
Yeah. I don't know how he did that. The head was as big as he was.
Well, it took him a while to get used to it, but he couldn't see anything. He had to do it all by feel.
Wow.
But he's a wild and crazy guy. Still is.
And I know you're working with him on a couple of projects.
Yes.
In fact, Tuesday we had Ross Friedman, Ross the Boss, on. And talking about you guys and talking about working with Albert and his band. And I didn't realize how active the two of you had remained. I knew you were doing some things, and I heard about Blue Coop and all that, which we'll talk about. But I'm thrilled that you're still putting out all these solo albums, and the latest, of course, being Strange Legends.
Yes. And it's doing really well. I put out two singles. One of them is in the top 10 in Holland at the moment, which is nice. And it's doing really well. This is my sixth solo album.
Mm-hmm.
So every one I do, I think I get a little bit better. So this is the best one yet. And I'm feeling good about it. It really is a good time to be producing yourself if you are inclined that way.
And mm-hmm.
I love the technical side of the whole thing. And it's working out great.
You released this past summer, correct?
Yeah, in July, I believe. Yeah,
right in the middle of the world going to hell.
I know.
Hey, good timing there, Joe.
We got a recording deal in the middle of hell.
Wow.
I can't believe you know financial collapse, pandemic, lockdown, and they want to give us a recording deal. You know, so my brother and I, Albert and I, started our own record label, which is called Rock Heart Records.
Okay.
And my album is the first album out on that label, and his album, which comes out in November, which is fantastic, will be the second album. And then we have other projects that we're going to do in 2021. So, who would think that after all these years they'd give us a deal?
Right. Why at this point do you think it's a good time for you and Albert to have your own record label? The indie scene has been on for quite a while now, and you guys are no slouches when it comes to the business. You've known the record business for a long time. Why now?
I don't know. Well, I think we're really excited about what we're creating now, and I think people just like to hear good music. My album is particularly a real rockin' album. So if you're looking for an uplift
mm-hmm.
in the middle of your humdrum day, it's a good one to choose.
I would agree.
Yeah.
There's some really good songs on this album. Now, I know that She's a Legend is the current single, the second mm-hmm. single. What was the first one?
The first one was called Forget About Love.
Okay.
And it's a really up-tempo kind of tune and a lot of fun. I got Mickey Curry to play drums on this album, which he's a fantastic drummer. He's the drums on Hall & Oates Maneater, and he also did Alice Cooper, Feed My Frankenstein, and he did every hit that Bryan Adams ever had. So he has a special feel, and he can just lock into what I call the Mickey Shuffle, and so that made that first single really stand out, was his performance on the drums. Through the whole album, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know I have a drummer in my family.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, why wasn't Albert in that one?
Well, you know, I do a lot of projects with Albert. And he happens to think that Mickey Curry is one of the best drummers. And Mickey loves Albert's drumming. So I thought it was a really good fit, you know, to bring in an outside drummer and see how that worked out. And it the proof is in the sound. It's right in the mix. So,
well,
yeah.
That I got to tell you, we're going to play a few songs off this. We'll play both of those singles in just before we say goodbye tonight. I do want to ask you about another current trend, in addition to you having a new record label, and now that you are wearing the hat of Record Honcho, are you going to be releasing Strange Legends on vinyl? I know that Power of Music came out on vinyl.
You know, every day we just sold out the first pressing.
Oh, it is out. Okay.
Yeah, the first, the album is out. The first pressing, I mean, very few records left, so they're doing a repressing. We sold out all the T-shirts. The cowbells are going fast.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool promotion, I got to say. We'll talk about that.
I've never, usually we put out these solo albums, but we do it all ourselves. But now we have a team that is helping us get it all together, and it's working out fantastically, you know.
Will you go back to the earlier solo albums and release those on vinyl eventually?
Yeah, I have two vinyls from my earlier solo albums, and they do very well, and I sell them off my website.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there probably will be more vinyl in the future. You know, it's a tremendous way to listen to music. it turns the, you know, from just hearing it, you know, coming from the cloud through the air to a real event where you put it on the turntable and it, you get all your friends to come over. If you can, you get them to come over and listen to the recording, and it becomes an event.
Mm-hmm.
I miss the old vinyl days, you know.
I do, too.
You remember those days.
Oh, yeah. I have two vinyl record stores right now that I run. And,
oh, nice.
I've got to say, I was very happy to see some of the old Blue Oyster Cult concerts coming back. Some of the live concerts are now back on vinyl for Record Store Day and things like that.
Yeah.
That's what made me think you would probably be leaning in that vinyl direction.
Because we're getting very close to that. Things have been going so well. You know, it sort of depends on economics. You know, if the numbers add up, you're going to get the vinyl, you know. So I'm not going to make an official announcement right now.
Mm-hmm. We won't hold you to it.
But I think that it looks very good for vinyl, you know.
All right. Now, listeners, you can follow Joe and find all these wonderful albums we're talking about at joebouchard.com. There is a link there. And one of the things that Joe mentioned that I think we definitely need to talk about is the timeless cowbell that BOC is so well known for, Albert is so well known for. You guys came up with a great promotion, and that is a signed cowbell. Tell us how that works.
Well, you know, you can go to our website, my website, which is joebouchard.com, and there's a link right there that'll get you to the merchandise and all of that. And, well, it's one of those things that started on Saturday Night Live, you know, a couple of decades ago. It was 2000.
Good old Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell and Christopher Walken. Christopher Walken used to be one of my neighbors.
Wow.
He used to jog in front of my house every day. This was back in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
long time ago. And, So, you know, between Will Ferrell and Christopher Walken and the rest of the gang, you know, they just nailed it as far as, like, you know, we were just gobsmacked. We didn't know it was coming. You know, we all found out about it after it happened. And, it's sort of a cultural icon right now, you know. When you need something to go over the top, you just have to add a little more cowbell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easy.
That's become a piece of rock culture now.
Yes, it has. I mean, all kinds. I heard about guys that go to hockey games, and everybody brings a cowbell to the hockey game, and during the break, they play Don't Fear the Reaper, and everybody plays on their cowbell at the hockey game. It's crazy.
Wow. That's something else. You've made history.
Yes.
This album that we're talking about, Strange Legends, we're going to play another cut from it right now. What do you want to play? Do you want to play the first single or the second single? Forget About Love or She's a Legend?
Oh, She's a Legend.
All right, let's
That's
do that.
Classic.
That is track number 6 on Joe's Strange Legends album. We'll be back with Joe right after this. Check it out. It's a short one.
Their mouths. that I might tell this tale.
She's a legend, and so is my guest, Joe Bouchard, bass player of BOC Days. Currently has his own group, Blue Coop. We're going to get to something there. He's got his own record label now. He's a big shot, and we love him. Joe Bouchard, you've been keeping busy. I just can't believe that at this point, I'm younger than you, and I'm ready to retire. How do you do it?
Well, I did a lot of different things over the last 30 years, you know, since I left the group in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was in a publishing company for a while. I did a lot of private teaching. That was a nice run. But, I got to a point where I retired from all of that, and it just opened up all this world of artistic stuff that I've always wanted to do. And it's great. It's just, get to be a songwriter full time now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now you mentioned that it's nice to be able to do things on your own, but at the same time, back in the day when you were with Columbia Records and before that with Elektra Records, you had people, and the people did a lot of the running and a lot of the work, it's all on you.
Yes. Yeah, I take responsibility for it all, you know. Every sound on that recording is, you know, comes out of my fingertips and in my ears, you know. I don't know how it got to this, but it just seems to be pretty comfortable at this point in my career to, you know, be making my own records and, you know, calling all the shots. So
now that
I'm lucky.
That begs to ask, do you ever feel too close to the project? Because now you are doing everything. You're the cook and the janitor.
Yeah. It's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde scenario where I'm the artist, but I'm also the producer. So I go back, I think about all the great producers that Blue Oyster Cult had. And, you know, like Martin Birch, who just passed away recently.
Mm-hmm.
But he did Burning for You. How good is that? That's a great track.
Right.
That's amazing. And we had Tom Werman, who did Cheap Trick Records.
Montrose.
And then Bruce Fairburn, who did, Bon Jovi, everybody. He did Aerosmith, Bon Jovi. So when I'm producing myself, I'd say, well, what would Martin say? You know, is
mm-hmm.
that performance good enough? Or, no, it's good enough to, you know, you're just going to, you know, it's just going to wear it down. You got to catch it at its peak, you know. So I'm definitely wearing two hats, and it's okay, you know. I have my own schedule, so it isn't it was great to have that Columbia Records promotion team. They were fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And they're still friends of mine. A few of them are still friends of mine today. But they would do anything to get Blue Oyster Cult played on the radio and get shows happening and promotions. And they were not only all over the country, but all over the world. So they did a tremendous job for us. But now, you know, you're on your own. Everybody's got a cell phone in their pocket, got the world of music in their pocket, so you just got to come up with something better than, you know.
And when you can't, you go backwards and bring vinyl back.
Yes.
Rockhart Records, your label. What is your specific role there? Are you the president? Do you do the A&R?
Albert and I, we haven't figured out our roles yet.
Okay.
We are the co-founders, I guess, of Rockhart Records. But eventually we're going to have to figure out, you know. But it's pretty good. We've been doing this for years because we do the Blue Coop Records. And,
right.
And so we sort of hand off things, you know. If I can't follow up on something, he follows up on it. You know, it's a pretty good team, you know. And, of course, he's tremendously creative, and he's always got different ideas and different ways of approaching the same sort of artistic problem. And, it's a big asset. So I think maybe that's what these people, when they gave us the record deal, were thinking about, that there is a lot of creativity, and then that the two of them together mm-hmm. makes, there's some real potential here. So we hope that we can get out and reach enough people to press a lot of vinyl and do more videos and all of that kind of stuff.
What's the secret of working with family? We see the Davies brothers, we see the Gallagher brothers, we see the Robinson brothers, and they're always coming to fistfights and arguments. You and Albert, to my knowledge, I'm sure you've had brotherly differences.
Yes, we've had differences.
But I've never seen any ugliness between the two of you. We have been friends, and you have worked together through these years.
You know, through the pandemic here, I've seen more of my family now than I did back then. Once in a while we'd meet at a wedding or something. But now we have a family meeting every Saturday, and we discuss what's going on with everybody. So I'm actually seeing my whole family, and it's really fantastic because we all get along great. We're all just pretty happy people. We were blessed to grow up in a family. Our mom and dad were so supportive of whatever crazy thing we came up with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're going to be a rock star. Yeah, sure. My mom was so happy when I joined Blue Oyster Cult, the band that became Blue Oyster Cult, because she said I could look after Albert.
Wow. So you're the older brother.
I'm the younger brother.
Oh, the younger brother. Okay.
He's the crazy one.
Well, I know he's a little crazy. I remember those days of watching some of the stuff he'd do. What was it with? Are you from a musical family, or are the two of you the odd ducks out?
There was a lot of music in the family. My dad played a little guitar. My mom played a little piano. Actually, my uncle was a fantastic guitar player. He played a lot of jazz, kind of like Les Paul.
Okay.
And he had some great Gibson guitars. He let us use his guitars. He bought a Fender Jazzmaster the first year it came out, 1960, and he let us little kids use it, you know. So
that's cool.
Yeah, he was a big influence on me, my Uncle Bill.
So it's in the Bouchard DNA then.
Yeah, definitely. And all my brothers now, they all have their little projects. My brother Jim, he does acoustic music in Boston. My brother Bill, he's just about ready to retire. He's ready to start his solo album. It's funny. My sister Mary sings and plays, and yeah, we're all musical people.
So will we see something on Rock Art Records from the rest of the family?
You never know.
Wow.
You never know.
Very cool. You mentioned Albert had his own album coming out as a second release.
Yes.
Is that the one he's doing with Ross the Boss?
Yeah, Ross is on that.
Okay.
It's really good. It's called Reimaginos. Imaginos was a Blue Oyster Cult record.
Exactly.
That came out in 87, I believe. And I worked on it, but not very much.
That was your last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the last one
of
the Columbia records, you know. And I don't know, maybe it wasn't mixed right or wasn't promoted or it was just not together. So Albert decided that he was going to do this reimagined Imaginos album, and it is fantastic. I mean, it's sort of like acoustic, but it's really, really good. And of course, you know, Ross the Boss is great on it, and all the songs are great. So I think all the fans are going to love that because it really is does the set of songs justice, finally, you know.
Mm-hmm. Are you
finally
on that one?
Setting the record straight on this stuff.
Are you on that one?
Yes, I play trumpet. I have two trumpet solos.
That'll be worth buying it for alone, just to hear you play trumpet. A little trumpet, a little cowbell, please.
Well, you know, in my retirement, I'm sort of obsessed with brass these days. I was always like the worst trumpet player in high school. So when I had time, I decided that I would maybe dabble in trumpet. And I got a new trumpet and got an antique cornet that was, you know, 120 years old, but it still plays great.
Mm-hmm.
And I joined a brass band. And I play, like, you know, marches and show tunes and all kinds of classic brass band music. And I was just saying, this is great. So Albert's doing an album. He says, hey, play some trumpet. And I said, sure. And so I play better now than I ever did in high school.
Thank God. Did the other guys from BOC, are they giving you the blessing to reimagine Imaginos?
I guess, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Just wondering.
Albert's pretty tight with them, and they know what's going on, and I think they'll be happy with this.
Any chance, I know we just lost Alan, but any chance that you guys will get back together with Eric and Buck?
You know, I don't know. They're really happy. It's one of those things. They're really happy with their current band, and they've logged a lot of miles with them. So I think they feel like a obligation to give them the best shot that they can at this moment. But you never know in the future, you know.
Okay.
As long as we're all healthy and those guys are doing great. You know,
keeping busy, that's for sure.
Yeah, they just put out a single. And it's great. Albert has a cameo appearance in their new video. So
it's interesting if you compare some of the solo stuff and you compare the classic BOC. The song we just played, She's a Legend, is about a serial killer. It's a story. All of your songs are stories, and they're not like happy sunshine stories. They're very macabre.
A little dark.
Yeah, a little dark and macabre. And I always was under the impression that Eric Bloom was the one that was the sci-fi nut in the BOC days.
He is the sci-fi nut.
But you guys all seem to be carrying that on.
Yeah. Well, you know, we decided early on that we didn't want to be the typical pop rock band, you know, doing love songs, and so we sort of lean toward the strange and bizarre, and it worked well for us. Maybe we didn't have as many hits back in the 70s as some other bands, but I think that our whole catalog is doing great just because it's a little odd, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we're proud of it.
You guys kind of set the bar high for a lot of the bands that followed in the darker side of metal, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, could be Metallica, and, you know, and there's others.
Well, didn't they remake Astronomy?
Astronomy.
Yeah.
Wow. That changed my life. That was the time I was working at the publishing company, and it was a good job, you know. I learned a lot about books, and I wrote some educational books, and It was a good job, but I got really bored with staring at a computer all day.
Mm-hmm.
So I found out, as I was in the publishing company, I found out on the new thing called the internet at the time that Metallica was going to cover a song. So I said, you know, it'll be one of the usuals, you know, whatever. And then I found out it was a song that I co-wrote with my brother and Sandy Perlman, our manager. And I was like, wow, this is fantastic, you know? And they sent me a cassette tape with the recording on it. Wow, did it sound great. So the first thing I did was quit my day job. I said to myself, you know, this is a great opportunity. I have got to become the songwriter I should be. You know, I was dabbling in classical music. I got my master's degree, and I was, you know, thinking about, you know, writing ballets and symphonies and you know, string quartets or whatever. But then this Metallica thing happened, and I said, no, I got to write songs. Songs are where it's at. And that's what I do, you know. I think with this album, Strange Legends, it's some people think it's a little bit of a throwback to the 70s. But, you know, I just wanted to do an album that what I do best, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's how that ended up like that. You know?
Another album, and I've got this one in front of me. I want to play at least one cut from it to show the listeners what you've been doing, too. And that is Blue Coops, Million Miles More. I know 11 Great. Even is the newest. That came out last year. This goes back a couple of years. But it again, shows the community that you guys work in. Buck Darmus featured on this.
Yes.
Alice Cooper's on it.
Yes.
Dennis Dunaway of the original Alice Cooper band
is
a member with you
decades.
And Albert. It's a trio.
Yeah.
So tell us how Blue Coop got together. You started out with your first album, at least, in 11. You put Million Miles or More in 13. You just released a new one, so I'm thinking it's going strong.
Yeah.
Tell us about the balancing act between your solo careers and Blue Coop and how Blue Coop got together with the brothers and Dennis.
Dennis has been my friend ever since 1972, when we played as the opening act for Alice Cooper. So I've known Dennis for ages, and he lives up here near me in Connecticut. So we've been in various bands, and we played various shows. I had a band with his brother-in-law, Neil Smith, who's
right.
From Alice Cooper also. And that was really good. And that went on for quite a while, but Neil just doesn't like to play very much. I mean, he doesn't like to go out,
mm-hmm.
you know, do tours. So that's fine. So at the same time that Neil sort of faded out of that situation, Albert was available. And, you know, we played a couple of times with Dennis, and it was a perfect fit. This is great, you know. That was the founding of Blue Coop, which is a combination of Blue Oyster Cult and Alice Cooper.
What a monster mashup there.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. We get to do shows where we can do half of the Blue Oyster Cult catalog. We can do Alice Cooper catalog. We do our own songs.
Mm-hmm.
It's really great. You know, we're going to put out we're working on negotiating for a live album of Blue Coop, which should be out early next year. And
now, will Blue Coop revert to Rockhart Records, or are you keeping that separate?
We don't know.
Okay.
Dennis does a lot of things with Alice. So, you know, it sort of depends on what happens, you know, on his end
mm-hmm.
With that. You know, they're always working on a song. They've got an album that he's working on that's all about Detroit rock and roll. So
they did that a few albums ago. They went back to the old instruments. I remember Alice telling me about it. We pulled the stuff out of mothballs, got the old boys together, and made an album. And that was a couple albums back.
They've got even more stuff coming out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's
it's
go
nice
ahead.
Nice creative situation.
Let's feature something from Million Miles More. My partial ones that I'm favorite with, and we'll play whatever you want off this, but first track, Prophets, Dukes, and Nomads, Hallow's Grave, and Hellfire Hurry are my three favorites right now. The first three on the album. So.
Well, I would love to hear Alice Cooper.
Okay, so that would be Hallow's Grave.
Hallow's Grave.
All right, that's track number three.
Yeah.
And that is Blue Coop. Again, this came out in 2013. It features Alice as a special guest. Dennis Dunaway, Albert, and Joe Bouchard. Let's listen.
Jumping around.
Some perfect Halloween musical fodder there. That is Hallow's Grave. Scary stuff there.
Nice to hear Alice Cooper.
I love Alice.
I can't believe that he did that. That was a last-minute thing.
Was it?
I had finished the vocal. I had sang it. And you know, then Dennis said, hey, wait a minute. Alice wants to sing this song. I said, yeah. Well, yeah. So.
And there it was.
There it was. Yeah, he did it. Like, it was the last thing we did on the album. And Alice really worked hard on it. Some of those notes are really hard to sing, but he just nails them. So
I love the backing harmonies, too. Were all of you guys singing on that?
Yeah, and we have two background singers, the lovely Tish and Snooki from Manic Panic. We've had them for quite a while. So it's a lot of family involved in this.
Wow.
Yeah.
You, as we mentioned, released your latest album, Strange Legends, in summer, and it's a time now when music is dead, so to speak, yet you're doing okay, getting some airplay, getting some write-ups.
Yes.
How are you going to promote this if you can't tour? And it's a question that so many musicians have, their heads are scratching because they don't understand how to promote, yet you released it at the height of it all.
Well, you know, I love video. And right now I'm actually sitting in what's going to be the second the second video studio at my house here. And I'm getting ready to do a live stream, and I just wanted to make it sure it looks right. So I'm ready to set up for video. And so I've done a video for each song on my album, and they haven't all been released yet, but they will be coming out throughout the next couple of weeks in the fall. And it's already September already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goes quick. Time
is flying. Well, so I don't mind, just using all the technology to get my performances out there. I do miss live performance so much. I can't tell you, because that, if I wasn't loading my car on a Friday night, there was something wrong in the world, But I've sort of adjusted to it, and now I reach people through my videos. And it's going very well there, too.
You had mentioned how Neil Smith didn't want a tour, and I've got to wonder, after all these years, Joe, what keeps it fresh? Why is it exciting for you to pack the bag on Friday and hit the road? Why not put your feet up on the porch and say, I've done all that. I'm going to kick back and have a drink.
When you're in front of a crowd in a theater or a arena or a festival, and everybody is singing along with your songs, it is the most incredible feeling in the world. I mean, it's just that rush of being in front of an audience. It's addictive. I've been doing it since I was 10 years old. When I did my first gig, and then all through high school, I had a very successful band, and then I got really lucky and ended up in one of the greatest bands of the 70s. I don't know. I just love to do it. It's in my blood. Got to do it. And so, if I can't get out there, I'm going to make videos that express what I feel about the music.
One thing that I do want to touch on, and it's light years away from everything you've done recently and even in the distant past, and that is the first group, the Soft White Underbelly, the Stalk Forest group.
Yes.
And you were signed to Elektra Records. I remember playing a couple of the songs, Quicksand being one of them. I think that was one of the singles you guys had.
Wow, you've got a great memory.
It doesn't always serve me, but the sound was so different from what you wound up becoming famous for and known for. It was almost folk music.
Yes.
How did you evolve from that? And
well,
that was a weird scenario.
I was never a member of the Soft White Underbelly. I was in college at that time.
Okay.
And I was, when I had a break from college, I would go and move down to the band house on Long Island. And we would jam together, so they knew me. I joined when it became, there was an interim name. Things weren't working out with Soft White Underbelly. It wasn't working out. So I joined when it was Stalk Forest Group. And from there, I think we were on Elektra Records for 1 week. And the first week I joined the band, we got a telegram. I mean, you know, the old telegrams, the old-fashioned telegrams. And now you get an email. But back then you got a telegram that said, you are no longer on the label.
Ouch.
And I was so mad that, you know, they didn't even give me a chance. I just got in the band, and then they got dropped.
And you guys were supposed to open for Zeppelin, too, and that didn't happen. It just was a bad year.
Yeah, well, Zeppelin decided they didn't want to have opening acts. They just, except for a few of their very earliest shows, they never had an opening act. It was always Zeppelin, and that was it. And I got to see them in 1975. That was really fantastic. So there were no Zeppelin shows. I joined the band. I said, "Well, guys, we're gonna work and we're gonna make some money." So we started, you know, doing anything we could to play shows and get better. And then we made some demos. And then we shopped around the demos. Got a deal with Columbia.
But the sound
was so different. And it was the right thing for us.
The sound was so different. How did you decide, okay, this isn't working, we're going to do this? Because it is so unique, and it's still unique, the sound you had.
Well, I blame a lot of that.
On Sandy?
Sandy Perlman,
okay.
Yes. Sandy was a futurist. He could think ahead. Mm-hmm. What's going to be big, you know, not today or tomorrow, but like decades from now. And he was right, you know. It was going to be this heavier music called heavy metal music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was all for it. I had no problems. Like, well, forget that hippie music.
Right.
You know.
Time to change.
Let's rock hard and, you know, play some big shows and, you know, conquer the world.
Something else Sandy is credited with, and I was at that show at the Civic Center when I had to sign a waiver because you were the first band to use lasers, if I'm not mistaken. And if I remember correctly, you guys actually had, like, gotten the lasers from a medical facility or something. They were, like, industrial lasers.
Well,
and we had to sign waivers because nobody knew what would happen if a laser hit
that
your retina.
True. It was all new technology.
Yeah.
There were a couple other people that used lasers. I think Zeppelin used a laser for a while, and McCartney had a laser. But that was it, you know. Now you go to a disco and there's lasers.
Yeah.
But back then it was new technology. And let me tell you, these laser guys, they were kind of twisted. They had brain problems.
Maybe they got hit with the lasers too much.
Basically, they were out of their freaking minds. And but we trusted them. We did. Yeah. We did trust them. And it was one of the most fantastic shows in the world. That, you know, we had it for about 2 years. We had the lasers.
You had
about
mirrors on your guitars, and you'd reflect it back in the
crowd.
And
the laser bracelet was incredible technology. Using a laser down a fiber optic cable, and then there was this bracelet that Eric would have on his hand, and he would shoot it at the mirror ball, and it would spin around the whole room. And then we had like, it was crazy. We had a little pyrotechnic charge on the top of the mirror ball. It was like he would hit it with the laser bracelet, and the whole thing would explode, and like, oh my God. Wow. And it did look dangerous.
Yeah, I remember the local promoter made us sign waivers as we walked in the building. And I always thought that's one of those great stories I like to share on radio because I was actually there for this landmark point in rock and roll history.
Wow.
And one last legend, if you will, or rumor that I want to clear up, and that is that you guys took your name Blue Oyster Cult because you couldn't figure out your name, and Sandy Perlman had a can of Blue Diamond or Blue Point oysters in his cabinet. And somehow that turned into your name. Is that true?
It was kind of like that.
Okay.
It was Sandy's idea. He wrote a poem called Blue Oyster Cult that was part of Imaginos.
Okay.
And I'd seen it. I'd heard about it. You know, it was lying around and on our piano, on the top of the piano. We had a whole stack of papers that would be all the lyrics that you know, either Sandy or his friend Richard Meltzer, they would just drop off lyrics at our band house, and anybody could pick up a lyric.
Wow.
And work on it. So Lou Oyster Cult was one of the poems, and we were arguing about the name, and it was going in nowhere, and we had to rehearse the music. The music was really number one, but we had to have a name to put on the contract. So we locked Sandy and his other partner, Murray, into a room, and they said, "You don't come out of this room until you give us the name. We don't care what it is." And they came out 10 minutes later. They didn't really talk about it very long.
And
they came out 10 minutes later.
History.
It's going to be Blue Oyster Cult.
What a great name it was, especially with the sci-fi music and the lasers and everything else. It was perfect.
Yeah.
Well, that music we're hearing is telling me that we are almost out of time here, Joe. That is Forget About Love off the new album.
Great.
We're going to close out with that. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great talking to you.
Love to do it again when Albert's album comes out.
Please. Let's do a conference call, whatever you want to do.
All right. JoeBouchard.com is where you can find out more. Get yourself a cowbell. And let's close out, as I say, adios for the evening. Forget About Love.